Welcome back to the Perth Business Podcast. If you're a returning visitor, hello again. And if you're new, welcome. I'm Taryn, your host, and I speak to the innovators, creatives, and thought leaders in Perth in order to help you build your business better. Whether you're starting something new, or you're trying to get through a challenge, or grow, someone's definitely been there and done it before. So grab your cup of coffee, settle in, and let's get started. Okay, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Fox Friday.
Fox Friday, my Kolsch not good enough for you.
Look, you know there's a brewery inside Jukebox.
Yeah. Yes, I do know. Yes. Is this from the brewery?
No, it's not. No, this is a Tasmanian brewery that's moving to Perth shortly.
What's it called, Friday?
Fox Friday.
Oh, Fox Friday. Yeah. Cool. Oh, wicked. Little shout out to Fox Friday. That's cool. I like the can actually.
Very good product. For anyone who hasn't touched it yet. And it's actually moving into the Blaster location if you've been there.
Oh, yeah. So what sort of beer is this? Is this like a...
This is a West Coast, but they do a whole range and they really can't miss.
Mm. Wicked. Done a promo already. How's that product?
I know, it's not even for my brewery.
So what do you brew in your brewery?
We have a brewery, Terraforma, which is actually Rob Nassif is a shareholder in as well.
Oh, so shout out to Rob. Look at that.
Much love to Rob.
Yeah.
And it started as a nano brewery, a side project based off Juicebox's popularity at one point in time with breweries. And we decided, fuck it, let's do our own.
Oh, wicked. We'll get into that a little bit more, like in terms of your popularity with breweries. But let's get into you. So we met ages ago now, 10 for me, that's ages ago, my beginning of my career.
I dug up your SEEK application once.
Oh no. Found me amongst the pile of people. What was that, a marketing role? And it was well above my pay grade and I was like, I'm going to apply anyway.
I think it was an account management role.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You were just trying to crack in, I think.
Yeah, get into the game. And we had a really good conversation and I did spot this. I did get to actually visit the agency or the location, I should say, and the little micro. Do you call it microbrewery or
very nano? I'd say, yeah,
very nano.
Yeah,
what's that like? Enough space to walk forward, backwards, and sideways.
It's more the production that comes out of the tank.
Right.
Yeah, you know how you go into those breweries and it's just a sea of tanks.
Yeah.
Ours is just a couple.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Love it. I've got a visual now. You guys are based in Subi still, right?
West Leederville.
West Leederville,
right,
sorry,
next to Besk.
Yes, prime location. So if you're done with a beer, you can go in for a wine next door.
Absolutely. Gnocchi. Spend your disposable income.
Yep.
Very quickly.
Yep. Yes, that wine store is dangerous. Epic, thanks for coming down for a chat on the Perth Business Podcast. I'm so excited to get into it.
Me too. I'm happy to be here. Yeah, finally made it happen.
Finally. What? 50th time, time's the charm?
We'll go with fourth. I think fourth is a little bit more conservative, but yeah.
Okay, cool. How long have you been in Perth for?
I have been in Perth most of my life.
Yep.
Had a short stint in Melbourne.
Okay.
But I'm a Perth boy through and through.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, born here, absolutely.
Like country Perth or city?
No,
Perth?
Metro Perth. There is a link to my business partner, Joel, who brings the sort of the Bunbury side of our business, the southwest side of our business to the agency, but realistically I'm a metro boy.
Mm-hmm. I like the conservative southwest side. I call it straight up country.
To be fair, Joel and Jared, who was also a co-founder, were very influential in terms of what they brought thinking-wise about the grander view of Western Australia. So I think the danger of growing up in the city is you only think the city is it. And they definitely shot a new light.
Yeah. Oh, wicked. Before we go into more about Juicebox and how that was conceptualised, what was it like for you going through school? Did you do studies? When did this entrepreneurial sort of side of you come out? Would you be able to pinpoint it, or how did that work for you, that journey?
It's an interesting conversation. I think to go without going through the whole the whole run back, my father's American, right? So he has been in radio all his life, and my brother has also fallen into media. He's been with Channel 9 for a very long time, and now moved on to onto more of a managerial role, but. We're a media family, and as a result, early days, my dad was one of the first people to receive the internet in Western Australia, which was hugely exciting.
Stop it.
Yeah, because, you know, they only thought the internet was, you know, internet, that was the term back then.
Yep.
Was used for news, right? It was accessing news faster. So the point of giving it to media people was that they could get this access to this news faster. Mm-hmm. And dad
makes
didn't
sense.
Yeah, it does in theory, but dad didn't know how to use a computer. So I basically jumped on and had to play around and went, there's a bit more going on here than just news. And I thought, hang on, how do you make these websites? Like how do people do this? And so it began.
Awesome. So you were like the little mastermind behind your dad's, I guess he was perceived as the brilliant one on the side and you're in the background, like in the dark office.
Well, he was the recipient and I just sort of thought, wow, what an amazing to have this technology, you know, being one of the few that in WA granted it early.
Yeah.
And it pretty much paved the way for where I wanted to go career-wise, because I was 12 or 13 sort of building my first website. And, you know, it wasn't pretty back then, of course, but what it taught you is that you were on the frontier and I kind of just wanted to stick there.
Yeah. Oh, wicked. So did you do studies?
I did. I went into computer science because, sadly, you know, your parents think, oh, you know, at the time IT was all the rage, right?
Yeah.
So I'm 38 now and IT was where you went to make money and they said, yeah, okay, you like computers. Obviously, it's IT. But fortunately, I'm just in that bracket where IT started to sort of decline and digital or web started to have an incline and I made the jump because I was actually in a career of software development and I didn't really want to be, but I figured that that was, you know, where I was going to make a quid. And next minute, as a last change in degree, I switched out of UWA computer science to ECU to finish off my degree, focusing on purely progressive web topics because UWA were nowhere then, and ended up with a web-based degree, if you will.
Yeah, I wonder what they're teaching now, because when you say, like, back then it was all the rage and there probably limited opportunities to diversify in your studies, I wonder what it's like now with AI at the peak of everything right now.
Well, I don't think a curriculum will ever catch up, and I think, whilst I don't actually think that's a major problem, I think, unfortunately, with the pace that things move, by the time you decide you want to do something, there's not going to be a curriculum to match that, and almost being self-taught, sadly, is the way of the future.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for people who start their own businesses or even find their own avenue in life from a young age. They tend to self-teach a little bit, like you mentioned before. So I think as a kid, like from my point of view, I didn't realize you could start your own business. You didn't have to be special in like the sense, like you didn't have to have a bajillion dollars sitting in your back pocket, although that would be super handy. It took me a while later in life, in my working experience, to realize that you could start a business if you had a really clear drive and a niche that you're trying to, or like a gap in the market you're trying to fill, or a solution to a problem that's quite obvious that you think, why is no one doing this? So for you, let's get into a little bit why Juicebox started. First of all, can we talk about the name? Did that come at the beginning?
No, the name's not going to be discussed, unfortunately.
Okay.
You know, it's a question everyone asks, and there's a really cliche answer and there's the real answer, and I'm not willing to discuss either.
Keep your secrets.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah, look, the name's been a great differentiator. I think in terms of, like, you know, basically closing out on my career prior, because that's not that interesting, I was in the software development company. Mm-hmm. It was bordering on web. You know, we were sort of building online banking systems before online banking was a thing.
Yeah.
And I got homesick. So after leaving Melbourne, where I had a pretty good job, especially for my age, and coming back, you know, my good friend from university, Joel Pember, said, hey, you know, can you help us out? We've started a little design agency and everyone wants a website.
Yeah.
And I just, can you build those? And I said, yeah, I can build those. They're not, you know, that difficult, but let me have a look at what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And we had no idea what to charge. So, you know, the first one was $500. And I said, do you think they'll be okay with that? And they were fine. And then the next one was 800, and the next one was, you know, 1100. And then we found out that post.com boom, there were people charging in Perth, and God knows what, across the globe, $40,000, $50,000 for a website right in our own hometown. And people were blown away that we were willing to put them online for these prices.
Wow.
So Juicebox really rode the wave of website uptake. And that's the reason we exist today, is that we came up with the philosophy that everyone can have a website, and people are like, no, I can't. And also, I don't know what the purpose of a website is.
Mm.
And as soon as we provided the education as well as, I guess, the access, Juicebox was born.
Yeah, right. Because these days, if someone charged you or quoted a grand for a website, you'd be like, scam, there's no way.
Scam or template or dodgy or offshore or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But they were getting the absolute top quality from two or three young guys. You know, we were 23 when we started.
Yeah.
Just giving it them all, giving it our all, I should say, and delivering them an amazing product. And we just, you know, it's like, as you say, in business, you don't know what you're worth, right?
Mm.
You're just trying to make sure you're not ripping somebody off early days. And that's really how we got going.
Yeah. Because that's probably the worst thing to have on a review site is like, rip off, scams, whatever. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you're still true to yourself at that point. You don't want to make money. You know, you're 23. All we cared about was putting fuel in the car, paying rent and buying a carton. So
which you could do for $500 back then, apparently.
And some, right? You're still going to clubber at that point.
Yeah.
But in short, you know, we weren't greedy, but we... Yeah. The three of us had an absolute passion for quality, and as long as we saw a client smiling, that probably set the scene for Juicebox.
Oh, wicked. So where are they now?
The clients or
the three of you?
Look, there's still two of us, and we're still thick of thieves. We've been best men at each other's wedding. We're still inspiring each other every day.
Yeah.
Jared has moved on to greener pastures, something that he wanted to do when Juicebox was growing at such a rate, it was probably more suited. But all in all, it was a beautiful 13 years between the three of us, and
epic.
Everything remains amicable to this day.
That's so, I don't want to say unheard of, but that is crazy. Like, you can't even live with a housemate for 13 years without tearing each other's hair out, you know what I mean? I think that's a business. Like, if we speak to the challenge of starting a business with partners, what was the hardest thing about that, or maybe it was for you the best part?
I don't think I could say there has been one moment in time where Joel, who's my current business partner, and I have not seen eye to eye. We have great respect for one another. We know to stay in our own lanes.
Mm-hmm.
We're still the best of friends. In fact, I'd probably call him my best friend.
Yeah.
We talk every day. We socialise on the weekends. We're kind of like a freak of nature, and whilst I don't want to sound like BFF sort of style, I think it is a very rare relationship, and one that I've never been able to repeat. So, very proud that I can call him my business partner, even more proud that I can call him my best mate, and for that reason, it's probably the secret to success.
Secret sauce, I suppose a business partnership can make or break you in a very... like harmful financially, but also soul wreckingly way, if that's a term, because they're supposed to be your, you know, your be all and end all when it comes to business relationship, but it's also your personality, your soul, like who you're sharing your time with and your ideas with. So it's very personal.
I agree. Like, I admire people that start on their own and do their own business and grow it to a point, and, you know, let's say they've got a lot of staff underneath. I really do admire, because they're very lonely at the top, right?
Mm.
It's a lonely game, being at the top of a business, especially as a sole director or the CEO, without any sort of equal support. And so I would never, even though I'm kind of very independent as an operator, I would never want that. Having Joel as a sounding board has just kept me sane, and he knows when I'm sane, I'm at my best. And so if that's the dynamic, we'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like you have to have the same drive as well. Like, I've had podcast co-hosts in the past, and epic for what they've contributed and the value they brought, but it doesn't quite match, like, I guess, my expectations of the podcast for myself, and therefore
here I am.
Yeah, yeah, so sure.
Good for a time and place. And then I think, yeah, they've had other ambitions, like you said, greener pastures that they're trying to achieve in their own game, and that's cool. But it's super interesting to me, the dynamic of running a business together, because I, like, yeah, my brain wraps itself around that concept very loosely.
I think 15 years is something that not even I sort of go, oh, you know, it just happened. It, like, 15 years of being absolutely functional in a relationship is crazy.
And right?
Yeah, and look, it's not going to, I can tell you, we won't get to 25, but because, like, we're not going to break records, but, yeah, I wouldn't say we're proud, we're appreciative that it is something unique, and as a result, it's something that's led us to where we are today.
You can acknowledge it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Special. Okay, so how does it work then, or how has it worked for you in building the team up for Juicebox? Because I think it's interesting how much the climate has changed in Perth, just from my, like, my snippet of experience with it compared to how long businesses have been running, and particularly with the web since internet was a thing. I feel like building a team in itself is a challenging task in your industry. How have you found it? Maybe you can start with building a team from starting with the three of you and taking on someone new, or finding what sort of departments you needed to service certain client needs. How did you find that? What was the most tricky part of getting around that problem?
Yeah, well, look, Taryn, I'm not big on cliches, so I'm going to try and just tell it straight. And
please, then, this is what we're here
for. You know, avoid anything that you read in the 101.
Mm.
For us, firstly, you know, we went 5 or 6 years before a business coach told us, hey, one of you actually has to be the managing director or the CEO. Like, you can't just be the three musketeers.
Why not?
Well, at the time, you know, we all wanted to have our say. It was lucky there was three of us, not four of us, because you didn't have a sort of a break even. But that, you know, for whatever reason, the two boys opted myself, and they seemed adamant that that should be the way. And then at that point in time, I realised that I had to be the decision maker. I had to be the final, you know, the buck where it stops. And that was daunting. And then I realised it was just actually what I was put on this world to do. And so I got really good at management, and I'd also had a few sort of inspiring business mentors or people that I'd worked under that made everything go through them. So they were kind of the conduit for all decision making, and it looked extremely taxing and laborious, but it ensured everything went smoothly, because typically they would get most things right. So I tried to adopt that, and I got quite deep into my journey as a manager. I'm going to use the term manager for now, until I realised that being a great manager doesn't grow people. Being a great leader grows people. Now, that's almost bordering on cliche, but I'll let myself slide there.
Yeah, go on.
So at some point in my journey, and you got to remember, I was 23 when I started. I was probably 27 when I was MD. I was just a kid. I was just a punk. And by the time I actually realised I was a leader, I was probably closer to early 30s, mid 30s. And I worked out, you got to bring people along for the ride, and you got to be the maker of meaning. So you got to tell people, like, we're doing this because, or the reason I think this is a good idea is for this reason, or what do you think here? Do you think we should do this? And really, I guess, galvanize a team. And I started with what we used to call the management team. And then one day, quite a few years ago now, I called it the leadership team. Mm-hmm. And I made everyone try and tell me what the definition of leadership was over management. And that was the day Juicebox changed forever, because I started to sort of stop micromanaging, stop being the final call, and basically say, hey, you've got my trust. Go and make the best decisions with the best intentions with my support, but I'm here if you need me, but I trust in you, and you go be the best you. And yeah, the agency changed and we grew rapidly.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Shivers. It also would have taken a huge load off of you, I would imagine, for having to feel responsible for every decision that is made. And to that point, you'd think, well, everything's gone right because I've had oversight. But you recently won an award, and that was in the past, you said, you know, maybe 5 years of the agency changed, maybe a little bit before that. And that rapid incline in, I guess, results you were seeing, but also culture, I would imagine. How did it change your operation in Perth? So were you attracting different people to join the team? Were you attracting different clients?
Look, I think it's all about the team. I think that our leadership team has been together, bar one member who's been only a recent person to join for over 6 years. So it's incredible to have that group of people. Got to remember, they're all in their early 30s when they sort of started, to be together for that long. And I can assure you they were under my sort of direction to early, you know, to begin with. And then as we progressed as a team, I started to say, here's my trust. I'm handing over the reins to you. And you're right, it dropped the burden on me, but I was so gung-ho that I was happy to have that burden because it was this safety net that nothing could go wrong, like you said. But then they weren't growing. I was stagnating them as professionals. And so what's changed is I feel like the people that are in my leadership team are now completely autonomous and independent of anything that I am. They make their own decisions. They manage their people. They inspire their people in their own way. And now their challenge is, can they do that with their people, right? Which I feel like I've invested 3 or 4 years getting them to a fantastic point where I don't even think about them anymore. But they need to see that exercise as something that they can impart on the people below them, and that's the next frontier of maturity for our business.
The trickle down is so real, I feel.
Absolutely.
Have you witnessed that in Perth with other, I'm not going to say competitors, because I feel like what you do is super unique, and you've just run through what the difference might be, and we can delve into that a bit more if you want to, what the difference between Juicebox and other, I'll go air quotes, agencies, because I feel like what you do is a bit more comprehensive. But do you see common mistakes that small businesses that fit within your industry make?
I think so. Like, I think that I've been pretty fortunate that I've had some people give me some great advice, and I'm not always one for taking on advice, but external consultants change the game, right? You know, I remember this one story, which is so lame, but it's, you know, oh, you can send a deposit for your starting a project. You know, this is year two. And I'm like, what, people will pay me money before I finish the job? And a business coach or a business advisor anyway said, hey, like, you can't invoice the whole thing at the end. You're going to go broke because they're going to just draw it out until they're happy. Well, you've got to get their money, so at least to some degree. So there's buy-in. And that simple lesson was things you don't know as a 23-year-old. So that's what I'd call sort of, you know, grade 1A in terms of learnings and lessons. But we have continued to invest in consultants and professional development all the way through. And as a result, we grow as people and professionals. I think the number one issue with, especially in the industry or that we're in, is that people think that's not the right way to spend money, that hey, you know, we're better to spend it on new talent, you know, new fit outs, new products or subscriptions. That is an unnecessary cost, but those are the agencies that stagnate. And you know, I've seen many of them, agencies that I really used to aspire to, they haven't moved much since those days. And I wonder if they've ever been challenged by someone externally.
That's really interesting. I think some of the best interviews I've had with business owners, they mention mentors or business coaches, like, straight out admitting you can't do everything and you can't know everything, especially if you're on the journey to learning. Like, you can't always just do and learn. Like, maybe you can if you've got a computer and you can Google stuff yourself, but it's quite different when you've got someone who's been in your shoes. So point of this podcast really as well is getting those snippets of experience from people without having to go and meet them if you can't, you know, don't have capacity.
Absolutely. And even today, you know, again, it may be known, it may not be well known, but sort of tech, which is the executive connection, is a group I'm in. I know Clay from Bonfire is in another group. It's a bunch of CEOs sitting around a table helping each other solve problems. I kind of done my PD to the point that there's probably not much I can get from a business coach without them being industry relevant. But I can always get more from a CEO where I go, hey, I've got a problem. I've never faced this before. And you'll find one CEO out of 15 goes, I've been there. This is how we approach it. This is what I learned you know, doing it the wrong way, and I'm going to tell you how to do it the right way, and that stuff is priceless.
Yeah. Do you find people approachable when you ask questions like that?
In that sort of environment, they are. I'm very lucky that that's how the format works. I think that tech has been revolutionary for my own development, but like everything, all mentors, all consultants, all professional development has an expiry date, and the key is realising that rather than just sort of plateauing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you talk more about that? What do you mean by expiry date?
I think an expiry date, actually, you had my business coach on here recently, Rob Bentley.
Yes.
And if I couldn't speak of a more transformative man than Rob to all three of us at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he was imparting business lessons. And when we got to a certain point, 5 years into the journey with Rob, it was time to go and decide that we didn't need business lessons, we needed industry lessons.
Mm.
So the transition was there. It always seems hard to leave someone who's had so much impact.
Yeah.
And, you know, to this day, I still call Rob a friend and speak to Rob quite regularly.
Yeah.
But you need to know when it's time to look for a new challenge for professional development, because if you sort of stay loyal for too long, what you find is you might be doing them a good service and you might be showing your loyalty in terms of thanks for everything you've made, but those years that you stick true where you're not actually gaining much are the ones that cost you in the long run.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. And I feel like a business mentor or a business coach is almost like a parent. They should want to see you off. They should want to see you fly the nest and be like, put my teachings into practice and then go forth and learn the next big thing that I'm, you know, can't teach you in that sense.
Absolutely. And Rob was a father figure, and he used to leave us with homework, and I'd come back, you know, seeking the A+ because I was so inspired by what he taught me, and he was amazed by how quickly, you know, we moved, and as a result, it was more to do with the way the performance model of juice boxes is orientated to today.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we owe a lot to Rob, as we do to every person that's influenced our business from a consultant and mentor perspective, but Rob would be right up there with the gold medal, I'd say.
Yeah, oh, bless him. A lot of people have fabulous things to say about him, but it's demonstrated in your success and in your business's success as well. So in terms of the future for maybe you, before we talk about Juicebox, or maybe it's one and the same in this little pocket of the near future that you might be imagining, what does it look like for you? You said you're looking to potentially gain more industry experience. You've obviously talked a bit, not experience, I get learnings, I don't know. What would you call it? Industry knowledge?
I think that, you know, awards aside, I told you I was going to come on here and I wasn't going to talk about awards.
I'll toot that horn, that's fine.
Yeah. they're subjective and they're right place, right time. And I'm really proud. I'm glad that it created momentum for my team and all the people that work for us to know that we are doing things in the best possible way we can do them. But for me, the person I need to be inspired is Joel, and he also looks at me and says, does he have the killer instinct in his eyes today, and if not, why? So we often need to re-energize ourselves, which is, you know, an interesting term, right? Re-energizing yourself is not something you'd say every day, but we've been doing this for 15 years now. We're still young, and, you know, I think that to be able to really set goals and charge, you've got to have a really clear vision. So we've gone away and thought about, okay, what's next and what do we actually want? Let's not set a vision for vision's sake. And I think the long road that Juicebox has been on actually came down to the fact that Joel and I one day worked out we were the broadest agency in Australia. So we did the most services for the most variety of clients, you know, across the board. And even worse, if you asked any one of our clients what we were, you would have got 15 different answers from a subset of 20. So that was a bit of a dawning moment where you realise you can be a great agency, but you're never going to be known for anything unless you choose to move from generalist to specialist. So that is currently what's inspired us. And we've also realised that West Australia may be limiting in terms of the client education and attitude towards where we want to go. So, yeah, we're seeking to move outside of the borders of WA, not to the cliche of a Sydney or a Melbourne, but actually to Southeast Asia.
Wicked. Okay. Tell me more about the choice to take it outside of our borders altogether.
After 15 years, I'm defeated by the time zone comments from Eastern States clients. You know, it seems like even though they're on the exact same piece of land of us, they can't actually understand that we're 2 or 3 hours behind, mm-hmm. and that varies, and, you know, it's just a foreign topic to them. So time zone is everything, right. And obviously the Singaporean and the Indonesian time zones marry up beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, you know, we're currently a big fish in a small pond. We're very aware of that. Mm-hmm. We're proud of it, but we're not going to be complacent about it. We want to take our skill sets and put it into practice in a more challenging environment. Now, if we went to Sydney, we'd be a small fish in a big pond, and we wouldn't have any great differentiator. So firstly, we need to, you know, firstly, we've articulated what that differentiator will be in terms of value proposition and product, and then we're going to shop it out to a whole new jurisdiction and see what the appetite is.
Wicked. What? So that's obviously how you made the decision to move to that sort of area in the world. What's involved in moving internationally?
We've been pretty lucky that we've made some right time decisions in terms of the talent crunch that occurred in, well, Australia in general, but mm-hmm. it was very real in Western Australia. And so we started to think beyond our borders about, okay, we need to get this work done. We can't find the right people. The wage pressure was, you know, growing rapidly.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, where are people hurting more, especially during the pandemic period? And of course, the first place I thought was in tourism, which is, you know, Bali, first and foremost. So I had a friend over there who was running an agency, and his business basically went from, you know, booming to bust in a space of 4 weeks as a result of hotels, et cetera, turning off their marketing. And we quickly got into discussion. I said, look, I've got a lot of overflow work. Our economy hasn't really stopped. Can you service it? And I said, but I'm very scared about, you know, the quality you're going to bring and whether you can do it at the juice box standard. And he said, me too, but if we really work on it, maybe you can just set the standard here in my agency and you don't have to worry about that. It'll just take a bit of time. So that's a 4-year journey we've been on. That was, you know, basically wow. early 2020. And now they are an extension of Juice Box. In fact,
cool.
Only by brand name in their local jurisdiction
yeah.
are they not Juice Box. But that has been the masterstroke that has broken us into Indonesia specifically, and we have only chosen to grow our resources and our reach there now to the point that we do business development in that area.
Wow, that's huge. That's like, it's very much a right time, right place, but a really intentional strategic decision as well as a business owner. Did you make that decision like with a team or with support, or did you kind of have that conversation with that business owner independently because you're mates or you were, you know, had done business in the past?
Most of the right decisions I've made is because of mates, to be honest. You yeah, know, the podcast room we're sitting in now yeah, is one of my best friends. And, you know, I accrue these great relationships along the way. And then you just got to find the right time to see what synergy or complementary sort of activity you can provide each mm-hmm. other. And I always knew he was running that show over there. I just didn't want to be an offshore agency. I thought that was a dirty word. And then the time came and it made sense for him. It made sense yeah. for us. It made sense actually just on a local level in terms of how people were starting mm-hmm. to appreciate, you know, people using Philippine resources to operate their own businesses. So, yeah, you just have to make the dive one day and then you realise it's one of the best decisions you've ever made. And I think initially we thought it was just going to be production only.
Mm-hmm.
But then over time, we sort of started to understand the culture. We started to understand their economy. We started to understand the big brands that existed in places like Jakarta.
Right.
And, you know, Joel, my business partner, is off to Jakarta on Saturday to present with somebody from Meta for crazy reasons. And
yeah.
really we said, well, why are we choosing in a borderless economy
yeah.
to just stay within the confines of WA and wait for the next resource or related company to tap on our shoulder, or, you know, be in the running for one of the most notable brands, you know, one you work for, for example, but so hard to win. Let's go get it. And so that's our strategy right now.
And that's a huge differentiator. I feel like people who start and keep business in Perth, they love Perth, they love the blank slate, you know, for starting as an entrepreneur that's up and coming, starting anything in here. It's a great test capsule, I suppose. But yeah, staying, I've never really had that conversation with anyone on the podcast, staying in Perth. And it's come up before. I think it was someone who was on the 40 under 40 who were talking about, like, why don't we take advantage of that corridor of the time zone, right? Like, it's such a huge opportunity, particularly in Singapore, to have that connection and to utilize that, leverage the time.
I think so. And I think people immediately default offshore to Philippines, India, you know, there's some parts of Europe now that are focal points, but there's a lot of challenging working relationships with that time zone difference, right? Mm. Like, even some of our US clients, we have to be sort of at our desk by 7 to have a meeting where they're very tired at the end of the day and pretty much over us. So, you know, when you think about it, wow, we've got Bali just there.
Yeah.
No one thinks anything exists in Bali. And look, I might be giving away a trade secret here, but there's an amazing, amazing group of talented people over there. And we've got an awesome lifestyle for a very welcoming country, which is just a short flight over there. In fact, shorter than Melbourne, right?
Cheaper as well.
Very much so. And yet we just use it as a holiday destination.
Yeah.
So I said, well, before I, you know, jump into Philippines, which seems, again, cliche, I'm going to damn well explore what's over there and make a decision firstly. Yeah.
On our doorstep, it is, like you said, a culture that we all readily embrace for the holidays, like, vibes, but why not business? That's interesting. I suppose you'll learn as well why or why not. Hopefully the why more than the not, but
yeah, well, we've since found that there are many prominent agencies in Australia, probably less so Western Australia, that are utilizing Indonesian production houses or agencies for some of their grunt work. And you know, I could name names, which I won't, but these are really prominent East Coast agencies, and if they're doing it, clearly we're in the right space. So I'm very happy to be on that journey to date, and it's already reaped the rewards. But I think now that we're starting to set up a team that's actually more business development focused in the jurisdiction, then it'll only go from level to level.
Yeah, and I suppose that also provides an opportunity for people working for you or with you to experience a different lifestyle, a different working. We were talking about work-life balance before, right? Travel is a huge thing for people, especially, you know, younger or people who are wanting a pivot in their career. I'm not sure what sort of individuals your team is made up of, but do you find that they would appreciate something like a lifestyle change or even a change of attitude, being that the lifestyle change is not necessarily affecting them but maybe affecting the business and how it runs?
I think that, you know, since the pandemic, if I could, you know, pat our leadership team on the back for everything, it's that we haven't doubted the change. We've just chosen to drift with it, right? Mm-hmm. So clearly it's hard to have a hybrid workforce. Mm. But then if you really execute the trust in people and you believe in their good, it's not, okay? Mm. Like you just let the proof be in the pudding.
Yeah.
The same with just understanding work-life balance, full stop. Like, there's a reason somebody doesn't want to get up on Perth's coldest day to come into the office and get, you know, put on makeup, put on whatever, you know, put a suit, you know, whatever you got to do to impress a client. If they don't have anything to do that's of that nature client-wise, they don't need to be in, right? It's just it's a human thing that we have had to understand. So I'm really proud of how we've embraced that change, and I think the next part is to embrace travel in the same way. So the whole point of setting up this Indonesian arm has to been to allow the work from Bali situation, and you know, Juicebox is looking to invest in villas, etc., for our staff to go over there to stay. You know, part business cost, part mental cost to some of the staff that exist in the office over there. But the idea is just to give people a chance to go and do something different,
yeah.
and it not have to be a holiday. And at the same time, they're helping improve communications and processes yeah. in our Indonesian arm. So it's still in its infancy because there's a thousand things to think about, from, you know, the visas allowed that you're allowed to work under, all the way through to, you know, how do you really split costs? How do you really get benefit out of this for the company? It can be all about culture, but it eventually has to have some commercial side to it. So we've got to a point where we're pretty comfortable with it, and I think that'll unfold in the latter half of this year.
Yeah, cool. That's so exciting. That's really exciting.
I think so. Like, I've spent 3 weeks over the last 12 months working over there permanently, and, you know, it's crazy in terms of cultural difference.
Yeah, right.
You know, I've got some of the Indonesian people in the agency that, like, will go bring me in cold brew that they've made themselves when I'm used to going and get cold brew from a cafe, and it's so sweet, right? And,
yeah.
You know, you've really got to try and get on their level rather than, you know, them understanding you, because they're still intimidated that you're even there. But once you do break those barriers, you know, everyone's pretty much the same. We're all just people, and we're all doing the same thing. You just got to understand context for why we're doing what we're doing for a particular client, and as long as everyone's on the same page, it works out.
Yeah, sounds like you've got a good knack for, like, your intuition for sussing out a person and their, for lack of a better word, goodness, their genuity. Do you say that? Yeah, is that a word?
I think so.
Genuity.
Yeah, I'll let it pass.
Yeah. Have you ever had an experience where someone that you've put trust in has kind of let you down, and I suppose you were talking to kind of being able to let go of that micromanaging, or, you know, being so on top of everything, maybe not for a lack of trust, but have you ever had an experience where someone's kind of let you down when you've taken a leap, and how did you deal with it?
Look, I don't know how I became so quickly transitioned from where I was. I was very traditional, probably because of my own management as an employee when I was going through my careers. But then I guess I learned this philosophy, and I know I've said it a few times already, but it's the currency of trust. Like, if you just try and assume the best in someone and it's up to them to let you down, I think as a manager or a leader, especially as maybe a CEO, you kind of assume that somebody working from home, by default, I'm sure you've had this on the podcast already, is not giving you their all. It's a fair thing to say when you are a business owner, because for the past, you know, 13 years or 12 years prior, we could see them and we could tell whether they were giving us their all. As soon as you get past that, you realise actually the decency in human beings is the reason that they won't let you down.
Yeah.
And honestly, I haven't had anyone. I haven't had one good case of somebody who has taken the piss to the point that I've had to go, listen, we got to have a chat. I'm aware that humans are going to be humans. Like, a parent needs to be a parent. They've got to go pick their kids up. Somebody needs to come in late because, you know, their dog's had an accident. You know, you've got somebody who needs to duck out to a medical appointment and they can't, the things get delayed for 2 hours. These are things that, you know, used to be frowned upon, like, oh, what's this person doing? Now you're just going to say, hey, what they're doing is actually being a human.
Yeah.
And if we let humans be humans, when they are at their best, you will probably see that impact to your agency.
Yeah, for sure. I remember a time during COVID where we were, like, tracked for toilet breaks, and it was like, I'm sorry, you're making me want to do bad things now. Like, you're making me want to take the piss and go to the toilet for 7 hours, like, and log it under toilet time. Like, it's just, it's insane how much little things like that kind of exemplify their lack of trust in you, and therefore your willingness to not show up, I suppose. But if there is that two-way street of, look, I'm going to trust you, if you don't want to be here, let me know.
Yeah, and look, you know, you'll work it out pretty quick. Like, if there was anyone, again, I haven't got a good example, but if I could tell them a mile away, like, we care too much in-house to ever have somebody who's just, like, coasting.
Yeah.
And they stand out, right? Yeah. So fortunately, they come in, see the culture, and they go, well, I'm not letting the team down. We've got a good thing going here. So I'm going to give my all. And giving your all doesn't mean staying late or, you know, going to another level that breaks you.
Yeah.
What it means is, like, I'm going to make sure I hit the scoreboard today and tomorrow and the next week, and that I feel like I've contributed.
Yeah.
And as long as you can walk away saying, yeah, hey, I had an impact today, then play on.
Yeah. And communication, like you mentioned that before, if, you know, for example, doctor's appointments, sometimes that can be annoying. Obviously, you can wait long times and you feel guilty, but communicating that quite clearly is an easy thing to do. Maybe not for a lot of people, but I think it's the problem that is the breakdown in communication that causes friction and guilt and mistrust and all that. If you just said, hey, look, I'm in the waiting office, I'll have to make up for 2 hours somewhere. Like, I'm as frustrated as you are. Can we just talk about this and figure it out? And if you're not feeling like your boss is like, where are you? You haven't been online. Are you at home shaking your mouse? Like, just making sure you're online. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
It's different to being like, I know you're caught up. It's all good.
It's a two-way street, of course. You know, you need the employees to step up and,
totally,
you know, be as equally informative as, as you know, you ask for the level of trust you give. But I think we got the most amazing culture at Juicebox now. Like, so many people will look me in the eye and just tell me the truth, and that really is a mark of me understanding that the currency of trust is working. And I've explained them many times that the currency of trust is a thing, and they're just not willing to let me down and let their leader down or their manager down or whatever it may be. They appreciate that we've handed over this currency, and it, you know, they're not going to be the one that breaks a good thing.
Yeah, cool. What are you, like, are you listening to any podcasts at the moment or developing yourself personally in anything outside of work at the moment?
Yeah, I'm a big book reader, I'll be honest.
Oh, I love that.
I'd love to be more podcast driven. I've sort of ditched the car recently. So I walk to work, and that's been a bit of a game changer.
Yeah.
In terms of reading, I don't do fiction. So fun facts about me, I don't watch movies. People just cannot deal with that fact.
I'm struggling.
I don't watch TV. Yeah. Okay. So
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah, I just can't do rubbish. I need things that sort of add value to me tomorrow, not things that just entertain me for today.
Yeah.
And so the books I read are all about mindset. So I won't say that, you know, I sit there reading business books all the time, but for example, you know, I love the book I've been reading by Matt Tice recently. Talks about incumbent versus insurgent. So an incumbent is somebody who has kind of really established themselves in a market, let's call it Blockbuster Video, and they don't see, all they're trying to do is defend their turf, whilst an insurgent, you know, way back when, they'd be an incumbent now, by the way, would be a Netflix who's trying to break into that turf through disruptive thinking and really changing the way consumers absorb the product that was, you know, the subjective product of, I guess, movies, right? Or videos or whatever you want to call it. So I love that mindset of how a startup is so agile, aggressive, radical thinking, early days, but then your success actually means that you stagnate and then just try and defend the territory that you've gained. So the mindset for me is like, how do you be an insurgent incumbent, right? And clearly we don't consider ourselves, you know, any sort of large entity, but we do think that there are certain aspects of being around for 15 years where, you know, there's not a lot more we can do. We're going to keep attracting clients. We're going to keep losing clients too for various reasons. But how do we go to and expire that next wave of clients, maybe even clients that we had, to come on back. So that's been my reading of late.
Yeah, and I think you're in the right industry for it, because there's so much that can change in tech, let alone like the web, all that sort of thing. So
yeah, well, look, I'm not going to do the cliche AI chatter now, but, you know, that's come out of nowhere, and it's rattling the cage pretty hard. And you know, as a result, having that mindset of, okay, let's move really quickly, I think has seen a lot of change within Juicebox over 2023 already. It might be on a quite a micro process level, but it's an acceptance that I can't expect to be doing the same job I'm doing next year. So how am I adapting? And it doesn't have to be adapting through AI, but realizing that it may be more thinking than doing sometimes. And if you can't sort of see yourself in that next generation, you have to basically work out if Juicebox is the place to be.
Yeah. If you had one sort of message that you would give to, maybe not yourself, you can put yourself in this mindset, in this situation, I suppose, but someone starting a business, let's say in your industry, in Perth, and looking to maybe do something a bit different to what has been done, or things would be very different now because what you would have done when you were 23 might not work now, for example, selling websites for $500. But what would you say to someone who's starting in your industry right now and how they would break through the noise? So I'm just going to hold
okay,
it.
You can do this. So my, fortunately, our performance director, Andy Davey, who's really industry experienced, he's worked for most of the top agencies in Perth and good mate of mine. He basically said, you guys have been made by the market. So whenever the market came out, he said, somebody would say, I need this. And we'd say, yeah, we can do that. And then they say, oh, hey, we need this. Can you do that? And we say, yeah, we can do that, because we wanted to be this agency one-stop shop.
Yeah.
And I thought there was nothing wrong with that, and hence why we became so broad. I said, just, you know, guys, hey, if they want it, just keep saying yes. Like, let's not let them out of the sort of ecosystem. If the current Chris Nelson could tell the young Chris Nelson something, it would be known for something. Salience, brand salience is to be, if you think of a soft drink right now, what do you think of?
Probably Coke.
Okay, so Coca-Cola, you wouldn't be alone, owns that brain space in your mind, right? When you need a soft drink or a beer, as we're drinking now, there is typically one that just jumps out at you.
Yeah.
So if I go over to Singapore to promote juice box, they don't need what we do, because they walk past four or five juice boxes that exist as we speak right now. They're the one-stop shops. Come on in. You've got to go and make the market. You've got to be known for something. You've got to be say, hey, if I need this, I'm going to juice box. And too often we start to broaden our service spectrum, whilst really it's much easier to be damn good at something and just keep getting better.
Wicked. I love that. That was such a good little succinct. I don't even drink soft drinks, so the fact that Coke pops into my brain is kind of annoying for me, but, you know, it is what it is. My actual go-to is Fanta, and I do that like once a year, weirdly.
That's my Dr. Pepper, I reckon.
Yeah, oh, I love Dr. Pepper. Don't think I've had that in ages, though. It's cherry, right?
Yeah.
Oh, good stuff. No, wicked. Thank you so much for sharing a brew with me today. I'm going to leave these bad boys with you so you can have a taste of Kolsch I discovered when I was in Belgium.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, you know they'll get drunk.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll have a taste of where I will be in the next 2 weeks. So.
How exciting. So this is the swan song. So I guess I should be the one that says, Taryn, all the best on your next adventure.
Thank you.
It's been an amazing series of podcasts with a super talented bunch of guests that have been all enthralling, and I'm sure your listeners have got heaps out of it. But you go kick ass, and we look forward to hearing what your next life journey is.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for being my swan song.
Cheers, Taryn.
Cheers.